From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Rebels advance towards Monrovia, indicted President Charles Taylor hides in his seaside mansion. Bush won't commit a large U.S. military force in a country of kid armies, senseless violence, power struggles and despair. The fighting seems far away for many of us, but for the large Liberian communities here, in such places as Providence, Rhode Island, Minneapolis, Minnesota and Houston, Texas, it's devastatingly close. In these pockets, Liberians try, often for days on end, to track down one family member at a time. Tonight on Point, Liberians in America, their thoughts on Charles Taylor's rule, the crisis in Monrovia, and their hope for U.S. intervention in their homeland. We begin in New York, where today UN Secretary General Kofi Annan again appealed to the Nigerian government to send peacekeeping troops to Liberia. Earlier I spoke to Los Angeles Times UN correspondent Maggie Farley. I asked her what Nigeria's response was.
Well, his appeal worked. He was alarmed that no action had been happening in the face of the growing crisis, and so he really put pressure on the United States and the African leaders, especially the Nigerians, who had promised troops to go ahead and do something. And they announced just in the last couple of hours that they are sending their troops and they'll be there by August 5th.
And has Nigeria resolved the financial row with the United States? They were asking for more money to fund the peacekeeping mission.
It hasn't been resolved, but Kofi Annan took an unusual step to gloss over the problem for the time being. He has asked the Security Council to divert money from a peacekeeping mission in Sierra Leone to temporarily fund the Nigerian troops in Monrovia. And then they'll have to work out the details later. But the important thing, he said, was just to get the process moving.
So Nigerian peacekeepers in Monrovia next week, in what numbers and with what kind of mandate?
Well, the first battalion will arrive by August 5th, and that's about 800 troops. There will be about 1,500 altogether. They're not UN troops. That's important to distinguish. They're being borrowed from the UN, but representing the coalition of West African states. Their mandate is to stabilize the situation, and it's unclear whether or not they'll be able to use full Chapter 7 force, whether they'll be authorized to actually use their weapons like a full army. But I think that they will, since they're not going under UN auspices.
Because up until now, the Nigerians have been reluctant to intervene while the fighting was going on. Do they envisage then that they might have to separate the warring factions?
I think that they really will have to do some hard work. But it will be a big psychological and symbolic gesture to have these troops arriving. It shows the competing rebel factions in Liberia that the cavalry really is coming, and the rest of the world is going to be there in short order, so they should stand down.
And any further word on when and if American troops will be deployed in Liberia, or is Washington now cast in the role of financier?
Ideally, I think that Washington would like to just be able to write the checks, but President Bush said today in his interview in the Rose Garden that they were going to keep the ship with, 2,300 Marines and sailors off the coast, but they weren't committing any boots on the ground. And I think that they would like to not have to do that. They might send in command and control and logistics people and maybe even a few officers to command some of those battalions or provide military advice, but are still very, very reluctant to send in the soldiers.
Now, as I understand it, as soon as those Nigerian peacekeepers arrive, President Charles Taylor will go. At least that's what he's said in the past.
That's right. He made that commitment last June, although he's been waffling in the last couple of days, and that makes everybody very nervous. Nigeria has offered him asylum, said that he can bring money. He can even do business as long as he stays out of politics. The United States introduced a resolution today in the Security Council, and that's all part of it. Everything is contingent on Charles Taylor's departure. It's a very tightly choreographed movement here.
And what are the plans for Liberia when Charles Taylor does leave the country, if indeed he does?
Well, I'll lay out the choreography for you. First, the Nigerian troops come in, two battalions, and then a third battalion of Senegalese and troops from Mali and Ghana. That should trigger an American response, the UN is hoping, or at least some sort of multinational force that the U.S. will back. They'll come in and hold the peace. They won't make the peace. They'll just hold it and stabilize the situation, help demobilize the Liberian army. The United States would like to be out of there by October 1st, and they actually put that in the resolution today. By October 1st, the UN peacekeeping troops are supposed to come in and relieve everybody, and then they'll stay until the peace is guaranteed and elections are held.
And in the meantime, will there be some sort of transitional government?
They'll be working on that. They'll have sent in a whole UN team to work on a transitional government, but they think that will take quite a while.
And the arrival of the Nigerian peacekeepers and the restoration of some kind of stability will clear the way for the arrival, presumably, of much-needed humanitarian supplies.
That's right. Right now, Monrovia is completely choked off. The rebels have closed off the port of Buchanan, which is the key to their delivery of aid. So once the situation is stabilized, aid will be able to come in. There are all sorts of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, who have promised to come in and help deliver humanitarian relief as soon as the situation is stable. But everybody is waiting for someone else to take the first step to cure the area.
Maggie, thank you very much indeed for that.
You're welcome.
Maggie Farley is United Nations correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She spoke to us from New York. When Jaitia Nangbe, Danlet Norris and Tinakbele Warner think about the conflict in Liberia, they think about a country they love and left behind, about family members killed and about children bearing arms. They follow each fight, not only through the newspapers, but through insistent calls home to whomever they can reach. They've seen their country and its people destroyed by ghoulish fighting and power struggles, and they want the United States to help. Who is responsible for cleaning up the mess in Nigeria? Who is responsible for President Charles Taylor's ruthlessness? Does America have a responsibility to help its African stepchild? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now in the studio is Jaitia Nangbe. He participated in peace negotiations in Liberia and served on the Independent Elections Commission there. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also in the studio, Danlet Norris, president of the Liberian Community Association of Rhode Island. Welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us from Washington, Tinakbele Warner. He's an attorney and a former president of the Liberian National Students Union. Tinakbele Warner, we now have a date for the arrival of Nigerian peacekeepers in Liberia by August the 5th. Are you pleased?
Oh, certainly. I'm pleased. The arrival of the peacekeepers would, at the first stage, help to restore confidence and give hope to our people who have been going for the few weeks without any hope. I also believe that the peacekeepers' arrival is only the beginning of a very serious work to be done, and we call on the international community, especially the U.S. government, and all peace-loving people worldwide to support the initiative.
Jaitia Nangbe, are you pleased about the arrival of Nigerian peacekeepers? After all, the last time they were deployed in Liberia, they didn't do a very good job, did they?
Well, we are pleased to see the Nigerians taking a decisive role in terms of their participation. I know Liberians who are in Monrovia will be jubilating because of the news. Concerning the work that was done in the last peace arrangements that led to the elections, many observers who followed that process believe that a great amount of effort was put in it. There were some missteps, and we have learned a bit of lessons from those missteps, and we think we can move forward and correct those so that this time around things like that do not happen.
Danlet Norris, the pictures on our television screens are horrendous. The photos in our newspapers are horrendous. What are you hearing yourself from the place that you called home, the place that maybe you still call home?
Well, like you said, the pictures are grim and horrendous. News from home has not been very good. Those are the same sentiments that have been shared around from home. As we can get calls, those are the same images in the mind, in the words of people that have expressed those as they call us. And, of course, it poses like a nightmare to us when we see those pictures.
Because you must have relatives still in Liberia.
Oh, definitely. I still have relatives. I have my sisters and brothers and their children, nieces and nephews. And Liberia is such a small country that we are so interwoven that almost everybody's kind of like related. So,
and what sort of life are they leading at the moment? What did they tell you?
Well, the life they're leading is, in fact, it's just difficult. I have not heard from them for the past 3 weeks since the fighting intensified. But before that time, they said it was very, very difficult. Food was in short supply. There was no medical facility. Of course, you know, the educational system was down to zero. So it just has been very difficult.
And T. Nagbele Warner, does that description of Liberia match with the kind of news that you've been getting from the country?
Oh, fairly so. Like my sister just mentioned, I also have family at home. In fact, I have a very small daughter of about 3 years old, and they all have been surviving on basically greens and some other items they could provide or they could manage to obtain. And about 2 weeks ago, I lost contact with them. And before that period, about 2-3 days, they had called me to say they had run out of everything. We had managed to send them some funds, but the Western Union services are closed, and so they could not be able to get the money. They have not been able to find food. I have lost contact with them, and I'm on the side, only depressed, thinking about them.
So also, you don't actually know whether they're still alive?
Oh, certainly. I don't know whether they're alive. I do know that my older brother was also forced to flee his home. His house was damaged, and he has not been able to see them. So it's a question of only hoping and praying for the better. But you can imagine, I just had my daughter about 3 years ago, and I was forced to flee Liberia. Left her there, I'm in relative safety, but they are fighting it. And so I feel guilty and ashamed of myself. And I'm never, never at ease until I ever hear from them.
Tetia Nangbe, do you have relatives that you've left behind, relatives that you too feel guilty about because of their present plight?
Oh, certainly. I have a lot of my relatives that are still in Liberia, especially in Monrovia. My mother is still in Liberia, in Monrovia. And I also have friends, other, you know, brothers and sisters that are there. And I have also gone through this situation before. So I have a clear idea of what it takes to see people around you dying, and there's no help that is available. And you begin to wonder, when will my hour come?
Because the news reports tell us that the residents of Monrovia are running out of food and water. There are daily bombardments, mortars, civilian casualties. And that's what you're hearing too.
Precisely. And in fact, some of the estimates that we get, they're just rough estimates. It is difficult to have a precise count of the casualties. No one can count people that are trapped in their homes, that have run out of medications, that are dying, that people cannot find. The counts that they do are only for those who are in the open that can be located. So there are a lot of people, a lot more people that are dying than is being reported. As time goes on, the situation is going to get worse than that.
And Danette Norris, you feel that in the face of all this, the international community needs to do something urgently.
Well, exactly. This is what we have been asking the international community. As a matter of fact, we are part of the international community, and we cannot be isolated at this time because as you throw a pebble into the water, it ripples. And so the ripples effect on rub off onto the international community. If they do not do something, they should do something at this time.
Okay, we must take a break there, Danette. Do stay with us, though, and you too, J.T. Nangbe and T. Nagbele Warner. We're talking tonight about the conflict in Liberia, Charles Taylor's regime, and the country's future. How did Liberia become so ravaged by war? Should the United States protect the country, founded more than 150 years ago by freed slaves? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Liberia, the people caught up in the fighting, and what the United States' role should be. Liberia has been in turmoil for more than 20 years. Is the country ready for democracy? Is the fighting doomed to continue? Are Liberians ready to run their own country again? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking tonight to J.T. Anangbe. He participated in peace negotiations in Liberia. Also in the studio is Danette Norris, president of the Liberian Community Association of Rhode Island, and joining us from Washington, T. Nagbele Warner. He's an attorney and a former president of the Liberian National Students Union. T. Nagbele Warner, Liberia founded 150 years ago, more than 150 years ago, by free black American slaves. So much hope then, so much hope for the future. Where did it all go wrong?
Oh, it's debatable as to where the problem of Liberia originated from. But I would argue and make the point that beginning 1980, when the military took over, could be considered a decisive point. Because the problem of Liberia has not been much of a question of competence. It has been the question of lack of opportunity for the civilian population to participate in political governance.
And when you talk there about the civilian population, are you talking there about the indigenous population of Liberia as against the Americo-Liberians?
Not quite correct. I'm talking in terms of having the mass of the people participate in a democratic process irrespective of their background. My view about the problem in Liberia has to do with, first and foremost, the militarization of the country. The situation is that because, and if I may relate it to the present process that is emerging, there is a need for comprehensive disarmament and restructuring of the army because, as I started with, the role of the army has been very critical in Liberia. The army has been used by the government to intimidate, terrorize, and even kill government critics. And that has led to people fleeing the country, especially professionals and other academics. So as long as we have the army almost privatized by the president and the executive branch of government, people will be afraid, the civilian population will be held in fear, and the only means left for dissent against the government will be armed rebellion, as we have seen. And the way to approach it will be structuring the army to ensure that it understands, and not only the army, but all security forces, understand that there is an obligation to the government and also an obligation to the people, and that its proper role in a constitutional democracy should be established.
Danette Norris, what is it about Liberia that political grievances get settled in the way that they do, and that the country has now degenerated to the extent where young children have taken up arms, and these children, it seems, drugged to the eyeballs, pumped full of alcohol?
Well, like he said, it has been like 13 or 15 years since we had this coup, and it's a whole generation of children that have known nothing but violence. And so if this violence continue to perpetrate in these kids, it has led to this situation. And as he said, the military should be educated to a point to know their obligation into covering the country. And so with the situation with the kids as they are now, they know nothing but violence. And given that circumstance, it leads on to one generation to another.
Let's take a call from Victor in Stridley, Minnesota. Victor, what did you want to say?
Thanks for the audience. You see, basically, my main point for calling is to inject this very serious motion. Now that the peacekeepers have decided, or the international community has decided, to send in a peacekeeping troop, it is my suggestion, before I continue with you and further questions that you may have, that there be no Liberian official that would spearhead the transitional government that will be installed so as to usher in an electoral process. Why? Because all of the officials that are to be listed for the participation of this transitional government, they have all had all of their hands are stained with blood. All of they have enemies with each other, from the incipient of the first man, Amos Sawyer. They did nothing great there. Now, my suggestion is that just like what's going on in Iraq, that America has a general that is spearheading the entire activity of Iraq, that should be the same methodology that should be used in Liberia right now. Otherwise, we're going to be going back to the same process from 1990.
And you're a Liberian yourself, are you, Victor?
I'm a Liberian, and I was there from 1990 to 1996.
And why did you leave?
Oh, but 1996, when Paul Stillo officially came in with his rebel, it was devastating, and my wife decided that we leave at that point.
Okay, J.T. Nungbe, can I just put that to you, that suggestion there from Victor, that maybe Liberians shouldn't be taking part in this transitional government at all, that it should be run by the Americans, or even, as he suggested, the Nigerians?
Well, last Saturday, Liberia observed 156 years of independence, despite the fighting in Monrovia and the unfortunate situation. You should remember that this country has been in a conflict for around 20 years or less than that, depending on when you start the count. And before, long before that time, for many of the years when the country was independent, I mean, since the country has been independent, Liberia was run by Liberians, and they did well. And that country, and which Liberia has been a pride of Africa for a long, long time. This is an unfortunate situation that is obtaining in the country. It's a tragedy, but the country can emerge from it. What I can say is that I still believe that there are competent Liberians that can run Liberia, and they should be given the proper opportunity and under the right circumstances, they can lead the country.
But Liberia does, at the moment, seem to be undergoing a collective nervous breakdown. I mean, maybe for a few months, maybe years, it wouldn't be such a bad idea to have the country placed under UN protection?
Well, I don't think that issue is being considered seriously by the negotiators or even the United Nations. I think it is a far more complicated issue, and it could send some wrong signals. I still believe that under the right circumstances, there are competent Liberians that can run Liberia. There are Liberians outside of Liberia and within Liberia that have done successful work that can signal to anybody that they can run that country.
Annette Morris, what do you think? Are there enough Liberians with clean hands to run the country?
Yes, I share the sentiment of Tia. There are many people who are passionate about this situation and do not use this as a political forum to gain their own political ambitions. So, like you said, there are competent Liberians. We do have a brain drain on the country. We do have an economic drain. And I say a brain drain because we have a lot of professionals out of the country that feel very passionate and patriotic about Liberians that are willing to go back and serve to help rebuild their country. Not everybody has a political inclination. And those who are without political inclination can go back and work alongside with the Americans or with whoever is in there keeping the peace to rebuild their country.
Tinebule Warner in Washington, would you favor a ban on Liberians who have been associated in any way with previous administrations taking part in a future government?
Under the qualified provision, I would like to support that. But if you could give me just a moment, I would like to support Tia and the others against the idea of some kind of foreign rule or occupation of Liberia. Like I stated earlier, it's not a question of competence. And I'm also of the view that the bickering in Accra for the past 1 or 2 months is not an indication of the inability of Liberian to rule. It's by virtue of the very nature of the selection process. The election is going to be decisive. And when we go to elections, it will decide which Liberian going to lead the country. But as to question of competence, no, Liberians do have. And as to question of the group of people that should participate in the elections, Yes, I'm in support. Those who have associated with the government should not participate. In fact, almost all those names that we have heard about, anyone who have expressed intention to run for political office should not be able to take part in the transitional government, because it is almost a way of using a backdoor to get a state power that they have all alone wanted. So yes, I support the idea. Not only those who have worked with government, but those who have by some way indicated a political ambition should be disbarred or disqualified from participating, like the transitional government being run by independent professional or religious leaders,
okay,
and all politicians should go back and participate in the elections that are forthcoming.
Let's take a call from Harrison. He's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to you, Harrison. You're a Liberian, and you want to contribute to this debate.
Thank you, sir, for the audience. My point in this Liberian issue is I would not agree with my brother who said that we should have an American-led government in Liberia. I think there are qualified Liberians. It's just a matter of the opportunity. But equally so, I would like, as I stated earlier, for the United States as well as the international community to support whatever project we are all undertaking at this time. You see, the problem in Liberia, the proliferation of arms, especially in West Africa, is one of the main problems at stake. Right now, you have Guinea supporting the rebels, and right now the government is not in a position to procure arms, and so this is very difficult for them to either protect the country as they should, according to their constitutional oath. So if there can be a way out that the peacekeepers monitor and even warn these countries that are involved, that similar indictment hangs over everyone and the process be supported, that even those who committed the atrocities at the Lutheran Church and the United Nations compound in Monrovia in the early 1990s, that all these people are indicted, I think the signal will be clear and people will kind of shy away from using arms as a means to gain power in Liberia.
Thanks for that, Harrison. JTR Nangbe, should President Charles Taylor be brought before a war crimes tribunal? He has been indicted, but could possibly slip away to Nigeria.
Well, that issue is being considered, in my view, as both a legal and political issue. I don't think that Mr. Taylor should have any problem to appear before a tribunal if he is not guilty, as he has stated that he is not guilty. However, the enforcement of that mandate or of that indictment has serious implications for stability in Liberia and in the sub-region. So it goes beyond the legality of it. All those factors have to therefore be brought into the picture. And at some point in time, I think justice is necessary, and he has to kind of answer, to the charges.
Danette Norris, do you blame Charles Taylor for the suffering through which your family has been?
Well, Charles Taylor would be a component part of the suffering because the fighting started 8, 9, 10 years ago before Charles Taylor came to the picture. So it's like a combination of people that are engaged in this to whom we blame. He cannot bear the blame alone because it started from some other people and then it ran over to him. But at the present, I think for the stability of the country, he should relinquish power and move on because it's contingent upon him that his suffering continue. So if he does love Liberia and love the country, I think he should relinquish power and, eliminate the suffering.
Tinagbele Warner in Washington. Isn't it important, though, if you're going to avoid a repetition of the kind of violence and disdain for human life that we've seen in Liberia, that certainly one of the people identified as being responsible for that should be seen to answer for his crimes, that Charles Taylor should appear before a war crimes tribunal?
Preferably, yes. But like Tia just stated, it is now more of a political calculation than a legal affirmation of rights of people. Because Mr. Taylor is not being removed from power decisively, it means as a necessary condition for his relinquishing of power, some compromises have to be made. I am, however, not that much disappointed because I believe there are legal possibilities for Mr. Taylor to be held accountable for the wrongs that he had done and for the evils he committed. I also believe that other lieutenants of Mr. Taylor could be held accountable for what they have done. There can also be a Truth and Reconciliation Commission where people can be made to explain and maybe questioned and maybe given some appropriate sanction for what they have done if they intend to participate in civil life in the post-war Liberia. So there are a number of possibilities to address this concern, short of having Mr. Taylor appear before a war crime tribunal.
You're there in Washington. Have you been canvassing for United States intervention?
Well, every opportunity that I have had, I have used to make the point that indeed the U.S. government should help Liberia to resolve its present difficulties.
But why?
I have not had a chance.
Why the United States?
The point has been made over, and much documentary proof has been offered given the relationship between America and Liberia. But it is also a question of saying if the disarmament and restructuring of Liberia should be effective, the ECOWAS country has to be supported by the international community. So in addition to Liberians, the UN itself has called on the U.S. So it's a question of its own international obligation, but most importantly, its relation with Liberia, because the fact is clear, Liberia is America's own quasi-colony, and the relationship has been acknowledged over the years, and we think people should avoid the temptation of using possibility of harm to American troops to avoid or disregard such a relationship. I also want to quickly make the point.
Yep. Very quickly.
That America's presence in Liberia will be an opportunity to affirm its own commitment to Liberia. And the mission is bound to be successful because Liberians all look forward to America and will support it to bring peace to Liberia.
Let's take a break there. T. Nagbele Warner, stay with us. And you too, J.T. Anangbe and Danette Norris. We're discussing the fighting in Liberia and the people caught up in the crossfire. Who's responsible for bringing stability to the region, the United Nations, or does the United States have a responsibility to help? If you think the United States should send troops, how long should those troops stay? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support for the. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Liberia, its long legacy of fighting, and its future. Where do you see Liberia in 20 years? Will Charles Taylor and the rebel forces continue to strain any new government that is set up? Can Liberia smoothly transition from its current regime to a democracy? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking tonight to J.T. Anangbe. He participated in peace negotiations in Liberia and served on the Independent Elections Commission there. Also in the studio is Danette Norris, president of the Liberian Community Association of Rhode Island, joining us from Washington. T. Nagbele Warner, he's an attorney and a former president of the Liberian National Students Union. Danette Norris, do you believe that the United States has a moral obligation to help Liberia?
Certainly, I do think so. As everyone has said, the historical ties between Liberia and the United States is of long standing. Liberia has been alongside America in all of its strife. For example, World War II, when the U.S. needed a place to refuel its plane, Liberia stood alongside America.
So should American troops now risk their lives for Liberians?
Well, I wouldn't say risk their lives. American troops are going in to help their brothers and sisters, you know, restore peace and stability in their country. So the problem is Many persons are comparing the Iraqi situation to that of Liberia. We are asking for help, so we assure that this is not a hostile territory or hostile environment. The language is one thing that is very, very comparable to that of the United States, so there will not be a lot of problems in getting into Liberia, helping stability, and getting out of there. We certainly feel that the process will be much quicker than that of Iraq.
Getting in and getting out, Tia Nangbe, you think that if American troops do become involved in Liberia, it should only be for a short period of time?
Well, the American participation, in my view, needs to be more robust. And beyond the military participation, there are several things that can be done to make sure that Americans help Liberians get on their feet. With regards to the military participation, I think the duration will not be very long, but it will be critical up to the time of disarmament and demobilization of the forces.
Let's bring in Kalaktukas. I hope I got that name right. It was a bit of a stab at it. He's calling from Marston, Wisconsin. What do you want to say?
Yeah, my name is Kalaktukas. Kalaktukas Walker. Listen, sir. You know, I hear people trying to palliate and try to specify the United States concerning the dilemma that Liberia faces right now. I believe it is not the question of soliciting aid from America. I fully believe America is responsible for the devastation that is hanging over that nation, or that has been ruining the nation, Liberia.
How can you blame the United States for Liberians fighting each other in the way that they are at the moment?
I'm going to elucidate. In the first place, America is blaming Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor, after absconding from Liberia with some money from Samuel Doe and came to this country, I don't know what was the act that he perpetrated here that led him into prison. And it was said that Charles Taylor broke maximum prison, something that even a little baby nowadays wouldn't believe that someone would break maximum prison in the United States of America. And Charles Taylor went on to Liberia from here without any security tracking down or anything of that sort, knowing this country and its fastidiousness in their security screening. So I believe, and from sources while we're in the country, America had their hand in backing Charles Taylor. Now, because he went astray from their original plan and did not, you know, condescend to what they were dictating to him, and he went astray and became a rebellious person, America drew back. So America helped to create the mess in our country, and now they stand back, the government sits back and see us destroy ourselves without even intervening, whereas they were the initiator of the entire process. So I believe America has all rights. Even though we need the help, they should have a remorse of conscience and say that we helped to get this thing to where it is.
Okay, let me just put that to T. Nagbele Warner in Washington. Do you blame America also for the fighting, the violence that's going on?
No, far from that. I'm afraid I have to disagree with the caller. I think Liberians have to take responsibility for their own problem. I do know that it is not also only Mr. Taylor that is causing the problem in Liberia. There are a lot of Liberians. Other leaders of warring factions did not have to come to the United States, and they are still causing problems for Liberians. So it's the question of a Liberian problem. What we are seeing, and which we should emphasize, is that because of the relationship that have existed between Liberia and America, they should see it as an opportunity to make good a relationship, just as you have seen a neighbor or the sons in trouble. So that's how I see it.
Nagbele, if the United States doesn't honor what you consider to be an obligation, what will be the consequences for Liberia? What will be the consequences for those that you know, the relatives that you still have in the country?
The consequences may be very dire, and it is difficult to precisely define what they will be. I think the American influence is very critical. Like we started at the program, Liberians owe it to Nigeria for their own role, but they add constraints. that cannot permit Nigeria to effectively bring peace or complete disarmament in the country. And American influence and its general leverage will help to stop the bloodletting and the killing of our people. So I would like to urge everyone and all concerned Americans to see it as an opportunity to assist a country in distress. I am also trying to assure all Americans that Liberians do not want Americans to necessarily go to fight and risk their lives. It's a question of first being present on the ground, using its influence, both psychologically relieving the people and also making sure that necessary conditions of transparency are ensured in the disarmament process and other processes that are to occur.
Okay. Danette Loris, we're talking here about whether or not America should or should not intervene, but you presumably can't get out of your mind the thought of your relatives, of your friends in Liberia at the moment.
No, I just can't get the thought out of my mind. And as we say rightly, put it, as he has put it over there, these things going to be lessened with the peacekeeping troop presence on the ground in Monrovia or in Liberia. As it stands, we do not know where our relatives are, but we are hopeful that with the presence of those peacekeeping troops or with the presence of America, there may be some leverage, as they say, to bring some relief and some hope. As it stands, we are very hopeless right now, so we are hoping that they would come in and bring some hope to us.
And the briefest of comments from you, T. Nia Nangbe. If the troops don't go in, what then?
Well, it's not something that we want to speculate on, because the consequences will be very daring. We hope that the troops will go in, and we're still optimistic that they will go in.
T. Nia Nangbe, many thanks for joining us in this discussion tonight. T. J. Tia Nangbe, I'll get it right eventually, participated in peace negotiations in Liberia and also served on the Independent Elections Commission. Also joining us tonight, Danette Loris, President of the Liberian Community Association of Rhode Island. Many thanks to you. And in Washington, T. Nagbele Warner. He's an attorney and a former president of the Liberian National Students Union. Continue the conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, author Sebastian Younger on why America should send troops to Liberia. This is On Point. Award-winning journalist and Perfect Storm author Sebastian Younger agrees with the many Liberians in this country who believe the United States should intervene in Liberia's brutal civil war. Younger recently spent 2 weeks covering the fighting in Monrovia for Vanity Fair magazine. In this radio diary, he says America owes it to itself and to the world to send troops into Liberia.
Exactly 1 month ago, I was evacuated by the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia. I was there for the second of three increasingly brutal offensives, and I left behind what looked to me like a city on the edge of complete anarchy. I had no desire to stick around and see what was going to happen. As it turned out, my fears were justified. The level of human suffering in that tiny city was something that I think even the reporters who stayed on found hard to convey. I have covered wars in Bosnia, Kosovo, Sierra Leone, and Afghanistan, but for the first time in my life, I arrived home feeling lucky to have made it out alive. And for the first time in my life, I was so disturbed by what I'd seen in Liberia that I found it hard to read the newspaper reports every morning. But read them I did, mainly because there was still one hope left. President Bush, a man I did not vote for, and who I don't often find myself agreeing with, was contemplating sending a U.S. military force into Liberia. That fantasy lasted about 3 days, as I recall. In the end, the administration stated that we had no strategic interests in a country as chaotic and violent as Liberia. Let's put aside for a moment the fact that every armed faction in Liberia's civil war, not to mention the civilians, is asking us to intervene. Let's put aside the fact that the French, of all people, boldly intervened in Ivory Coast's civil war last September and stopped it in its tracks. And finally, let's put aside the fact that strategic interests is an awfully undignified criterion for a great and generous nation to use when determining the merits of a humanitarian action. Why don't we just put it this way? 10 years ago, Afghanistan was locked in a very similar kind of war as Liberia. The Afghans had been crucial allies of ours during the Cold War, and, like Liberia, our strategic interests there dropped to almost nothing after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Had a U.S. congressman proposed a humanitarian intervention in Afghanistan in, say, 1994, he would have been laughed off the Senate floor. Why would we send troops to a troubled, far-off country that doesn't even have any oil? In September 2001, our strategic interest in a stable Afghanistan became tragically clear. And now, in the middle of our war on terror, it should be equally clear that any country racked by chaos and civil war poses a grave threat to our national security. According to U.S. military intelligence, Al-Qaeda agents traveled to Monrovia in 1998 to set up a diamond-buying pipeline so that they could conceal their finances from the prying eyes of the Americans. Citing European and American intelligence sources, the Washington Post reported that since then, Al-Qaeda has bought a total of $20 million worth of diamonds from Charles Taylor. President Bush's famous boast about the war on terror, "You're either with us or you're against us," apparently doesn't apply to small African nations that are begging for our help. So let's try one more reason to intervene in Liberia. 6 months ago, the Bush administration insisted that Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction made it absolutely imperative that the United States invade Iraq. Since then, of course, no such weapons have been found, and the administration has fallen back on the humanitarian argument that we could not stand by and watch as Hussein inflicted his torments on the good people of Iraq. Having never witnessed a completely humanitarian intervention by the United States, the world was understandably skeptical of that reason. But an intervention in Liberia right now would give immediate credence to the idea that we had acted out of humanitarian concern in the first instance as well. In that sense, it is precisely Liberia's lack of conventional strategic importance that would demonstrate the purity of our intent. If we intervened in Liberia, not only would we be addressing a terrorist threat and saving an enormous number of lives, we would also be carrying out the first completely selfless and compassionate military mission this country has ever undertaken. It would, in fact, be a mission worthy of the great nation that we say we have become.
Sebastian Younger is an award-winning journalist and author of The Perfect Storm. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT networks.